Well, good morning and welcome to the first hour of Focus 580 here on WILL. I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for David Inch, who's a bit under the weather, and good weather to be under, really. We hope he has a speedy recovery. Sandy Mason's here, horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County, for a regular visit about lawn and garden care. And welcome, Sandy.
Good morning.
I don't think we've done the show together.
We haven't. This will be fun. I was just learning about your gardening and... escapades.
You know, that's what I was kind of thinking. It might be an interesting time if people wanted to talk about some of the successes they've had this year and some of the failures they might have had.
Actually, we learn more from the failures, don't we?
Yeah, you're just like Bob Ross. When Bob Ross does the paintings, he says there are no mistakes, just pleasant little surprises. So, happy little surprises. And in the garden, we do have some of those. When you plant something in the shade that doesn't grow and you wonder why, or you know, maybe something else that you did this year that didn't work out so well, maybe Sandy can help you plan better for next year. Our numbers are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-9455 in town and 800-222-9455 anywhere else you can hear us. And Sandy, maybe to start out with, if you have anything that you wanted to bring up right off the bat, maybe about what we should be thinking about right now. It's not really great weather side to actually do anything.
No, it certainly isn't the best time in the world to be thinking about doing things. But, you know, there are some things, you know, if you wanted to do, or if we do get a little break here in some of the weather, you know, you certainly could do things in the way of compost piles. You know, if you have shredded leaves, anything like that, you know, it's a great opportunity to be thinking about starting those compost piles. And I know sometimes it seems like a lot of work, but you can make compost as hard as you want it to be. You know, you can really work it and move it and all this kind of stuff to, but it'll eventually, it rots, you know.
Yeah.
Compost happens.
No matter
as we
what
say,
you do.
No matter what you do, it will rot. And so you don't have to make it in this big, huge ordeal if you don't want to.
Yeah, if you got a little piece of property, it's not bad. Just start a little pile and toss stuff on there here and there, and as long as it's not diseased or anything.
Yeah, and there's lots of equipment and stuff these days, and even things like, you know, these giant barrel-like things that are that you can actually roll or whatever,
so
it makes it a little bit easier so you can turn it, because it will decompose faster if you turn it, that kind of thing. But you don't have to do all that, but that'd be a good thing on your list.
That'd be one thing you can
things
do.
Things that you can give to people.
Is it too late to plant bulbs?
You know, we're really getting into that point where it... we always talk about ideals. Ideally, it would have been nice to do it in October. But as long as the ground isn't frozen, you can still plant them. So if you bought them or you got a good deal on them, I'd get them in the ground, plant them as soon as you can, and that's fine. And they should be just fine. Actually, I had a gentleman call one time, and we had been talking. He was concerned about his bulbs not being planted, and it was like January or something. So he actually went out there with one of those augers, those drill auger things, drilled through the frozen ground, stuck the tulips in, and then he called me back
and
in
they
the
work?
Spring. And he said they were beautiful.
Well, so they just have to go through the freeze, right?
They need to go through the freeze, but what really happens in the fall is they actually do set down roots, which we don't see that happening, of course, but they really do set down roots. That's why we like to get them planted in October. They're still warm enough that they can go ahead and set roots. So obviously they don't get a chance to do that if you're planting them in January and the ground's frozen. So again, it's better for the bulbs if you can do it, but usually you can get away with it to some extent.
All right. Well,
it's good that the plants don't read the books. They just do their thing.
I have seen a lot of people out planting trees.
Yeah, and it's not too late to be planting trees.
And you can still do
when
that.
The ground's out. Sure, and actually it's a good time when they're
doing it. Yeah, as long as you can get into the ground and get the hole dug and get it properly put in, and you still got to water it.
Right, certainly if we're not in any rain periods.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Wow. All right. Well, let's go to line one and see who's there in Urbana. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have an iris plant which I have never cut or trimmed or whatever you're supposed to do. Is it too late to do that? I rescued it from an empty lot where it was being mowed on, and I decided
good for you.
And I've had it 2 years now. I've never clipped it, but I've never mowed it either.
And so it's already better.
It's never bloomed.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if I'm supposed to do. And the other thing is that I have a peace rose, which is quite old, and I've never cut it or done anything to it, but an awful lot of it's not alive anymore.
Right, right. Well, as far as the irises, I assume this, you mean the big bearded irises, yes, that have the big rhizome kind of thing.
Yes.
They're really pretty tough plants. I'll give them a lot of credit. I actually dug one up one time, and I had way too much of it, so I stuck it on top of the compost pile. It lived through the winter on top of the compost pile and started growing. So they're tough plants. So I think what I would do is I wouldn't worry too much about trimming it or whatever. A lot of times we do trim them in the fall because they do get an insect called iris borer, and it's a moth and actually lays its eggs on the leaves. And so a lot of times people will go ahead and trim those off in September and October to get rid of those eggs. So you certainly could do that if you felt like you wanted to, but if you haven't had problems, then I'm not sure I'd worry about it too terribly much at this point. So I think probably what you've seen, because it's been mowed and mowed and mowed, is those rhizomes haven't had a chance to really grow too much and get bigger, which may be one of the reasons why you haven't seen it bloom. I imagine if you've been able to take good care of it this year, then next year it'll probably go ahead and bloom for you. And then generally we say for those that they need to be divided about every 3 to 5 years, because those rhizomes only bloom once. So that's why we divide them, because eventually you get all these rhizomes in there that aren't blooming and they sort of take up space and don't really help a whole lot. So that's why we end up dividing them. But you've already kind of done that by moving them. So I'm not sure I'd worry too much. I'd say it sounds like you're right on the money on what you need to be doing with those. And I just wait for spring.
How about the rose?
The rose, certainly on those hybrid teas, it can be some issues with those dying back, which is what you've seen. And certainly through winter and all kinds of things, they often have die back. I wouldn't worry too much about doing too much of it at pruning, unless you have some obviously dead stuff you could go ahead and take off. But then come April is in the time I would really go ahead and do some heavy pruning on it at that time. And, you know, cut out any dead stuff. You might trim it down to 8 inches or so and really shape it a little bit more at that time. So if you're not getting it, and those are sometimes ones that we do sometimes worry about getting them through the winter, because many of those are grafted. So the bottom part, the roots are not the same as the top part. And so those are the ones that often this time of year, which people haven't done yet, which would be another thing people haven't done, is to cover other roses with some mulch.
Oh, okay. Can I put like a plastic cover over the top?
Plastic wouldn't be my first thought on that. You're really better off with some good partially decomposed mulch.
Okay.
So just wood chips is fine. And, you know, mound those to 8 to 10 inches is fine. And just mound it over the top. And then don't worry about it until spring. And then at that time, you can kind of evaluate, see what's still alive and all that good stuff.
All right, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Great. Thank you very much for the call. And our numbers are 333-9455. And 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason's here. We're talking about lawns and gardens. And, she's talking about pruning. Sometimes we get a warm day, and a warm day now would be, you know, it'll hit 50 or 55, 60 or whatever. And, and it's like those early days of spring where it feels like you can go out with just your T-shirt on. It's all relative. But, you know, some of us start thinking about, wow, I've got a reprieve for all those things I didn't get done.
Right.
Because I guess, you know, my way of looking at it is that day after Thanksgiving is the day to finish everything in the yard and forget about it and go inside. But, you know, it always happens 3 or 4 weeks later. You get that warm day and you think, wow, I could take care of that now. And you talked about the mulch pile. But talking about pruning, can you prune a tree at this time of the year?
Yeah, usually we say if you want to do some light pruning, I think that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you just want to do some light pruning, you know, that branch that keeps hitting you in the head every time you mow or whatever, I think that's fine. If you really were planning on major pruning, generally, again, we're kind of back in those generalities and ideal things, generally we like to wait until we get through that really, really cold stuff. So a lot of times we're talking about February. Mm-hmm. Once we start getting in February, early March, then it's a great time to be thinking about pruning and cutting a lot of things down. They'd be a little bit reluctant to do a lot of heavy pruning right now, but you know, it's one of those things that most of the time it would still be just fine.
Okay, so that branch on the crabapple tree that's going to whack my Christmas company.
Yeah. You might decide that you want to go ahead and prune that at that time. But I should say anything that blooms early, realize that if it blooms before mid-June or so, that's considered a spring bloomer. And so those already have their flower buds on for that spring bloom. So if you do any pruning right now, or certainly if you do any pruning in February or March, you're cutting off those flower buds, which isn't going to kill the plant. But if it's lilacs or something like that you really want to make sure you have flowers, this is not the time to be pruning them.
Good point.
You always have to kind of keep that in mind a little bit too.
All right. Well, let's go to a cell phone in Champaign. You're on the air with Sandy Mason. Go ahead.
Yes. You brought up the sun-resistant compost pile, and I went all out this year and built a nice one with three sections, filled it full of chopped leaves this fall with layers of dirt and fertilizer and all that. My question is, Will this actually rot over the winter, or is that something we're going to have to wait until the spring?
Well, amazingly enough, and you can do this yourself, and this would be a fun thing to do on a really warm, on a really cold day, is just go out there and stick your hand in the compost pile, and you'd be amazed sometimes at how warm it is inside there. And when it's warm inside there, then you know it's decomposing. And a lot of it depends on, and it sounds like you've done a good job of just constructing the pile, which means it could very well go ahead and decompose. Now, if it's really cold, like below freezing for a long period of time, weeks on end, you probably not going to see much activity at all, or wouldn't see much activity. But if it halfway warms up, you know, we certainly get into the 30s and the 40s. And if you've got plenty of green stuff, which we always talk about, as well as brown stuff, leaves and things like that, then it certainly absolutely will go ahead and decompose. And I've even flipped them on a fairly cold day, and you'll see the steam rise from them, and it's just they're decomposing. So it's kind of surprising sometimes on how much they do decompose, even when it's cold.
How much fertilizer should you be adding?
Well, I'm not sure I worry too much. It depends on, you probably, I don't know how much green stuff did you have in there?
Not much.
Nah. So that's sometimes why we do go ahead and add maybe a little bit of fertilizer, just a general, you know, complete fertilizer, 12, 12, 12, something like that. I wouldn't worry too much about adding a lot of that, but it'll certainly help it to decompose a little more. But if you've added soil, that's actually really good. Or if you have some, you know, already finished compost, that's good. You know, I kind of relate it back to sourdough mixes. I don't know if you've ever messed around with sourdough mixes back when we used to have sourdough and you could, you know, make bread and all this kind of stuff. You always had this little starter jar. Well, that's kind of what compost is. It's kind of a starter. You throw that into your compost pile that you're trying to get to decompose, and it has all those wonderful bacteria and all those things to help things decompose. And so that's really good too. So it's great you added the soil, and I think you're fine. It sounds like you're on your way.
Thank you.
Sure.
Great. All right. Well, have fun with it. And boy, it makes me
good
think,
stuff.
You know, one of the things you could do is build the compost pile all around the foundation of your house and keep your crawl space warm and your floors would stay nice and warm.
There might be a few other issues there, so maybe we won't go there just now. But, hey, you're thinking. It's always, you know,
always
thinking outside the box.
Always trying to cut that utility bill somehow. Let's go to line two in Urbana. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. You and I have had a conversation in the past about using drought-tolerant grass seed. And I've been playing around with it some more. We have a son who moved to Lexington, Kentucky, which has entirely different soil, and it has limestone and caves underneath it and so forth. They have all kinds of different issues. So he's trying to figure out how to manage his new house that he's just bought. And was interested in establishing rain gardens. So I started looking on the web to see what information there was about soil in Lexington, and the University of Kentucky has a whole little has a web page where you can sort of take a test and see how green your lawn is or your yard is. And among other things, it said you should plant. Now I can't come up with the name of the kind of grass seed. Fescues that are drought tolerant. And I mentioned in a call earlier this season that I had patched in parts of the what we call in our family the tree lawn, the side from the area between the sidewalk and the street. People seem to have different names for that. And you can see where I patched it because it was green where I patched it, and it was not so green where I hadn't patched it.
Sure.
I wanted to encourage people to think about this because just earlier this week they were talking about how we're using so much water from our aquifer that the level is going down and down and down and down, and we're drawing water from farther and farther away in towards Champaign-Urbana, and that's an issue for all kinds of people, lawns being one of the things that we can do to reduce our water use. But I have a bunch of seed left over from this year, and I'm wondering whether it's worth, is there some way I can store it so I can use it next spring to intercede with the grass that I want to get rid of? And also, how do I intercede it?
Mm-hmm. Well, and absolutely, you can keep the grass seed. It's fine as long as it's not, you know, I wouldn't put it where it's freezing. I just try to put it where it's a cool, dry spot is really what you need. So wherever you can provide that basement or whatever, but a cool, dry spot is fine. And then you should be able to, the germination rate might go down a little bit, but probably won't even be enough that you would even notice it. So you absolutely can keep the seed from year to year. The other thing that you mentioned was how do you get that seed within the other grass?
Yeah, within an existing one.
Well, I will tell you just a couple things, because if we're talking about tall fescue, there's turf-type tall fescues. And I know you and I had this conversation, just so other people know, is there are turf-type tall fescues that look very different than the pasture-type tall fescues.
Yeah.
They have a much narrower blade. They're just more turf-like than we traditionally would think of with pasture grasses. So they have a lot of attributes. They do not have that same dark green color that we get with Kentucky bluegrass. So the color is different. And that's just the way the species is. That's just the way it's going to look. And it's, so I will sort of let you know that when you intersperse this grass within things like Kentucky bluegrass, you will notice this kind of little different look. Now, some people, you know, really wouldn't care and, you know, doesn't matter. But just to realize that people are sort of, you know, changing into this, that there is going to be a little bit different look to it. So just to realize that. And the texture is different. The blade is a little bit wider than Kentucky bluegrass. How you can get it in there is there's actually these things called slit seeders that you can rent, and it actually produces a slit in the sod and then drops the seed in. And that's really your best bet. If you're going to go to that much effort, unless you have a fairly open lawn, as in open areas where you can see soil, you really have to make sure the seed gets good contact with the soil. Otherwise, it's just going to sit on top and you won't get good germination, and you know, you might as well save your money. So getting something like that will really help to sort of intermingle that within Kentucky bluegrass, if that's the route you want to go.
Okay. Is there any way you can do it without renting something? Because it's not, the areas aren't that big. We don't
rake it. Yeah, you can take a heavy garden rake, mm-hmm. and really rake it to the point where you're actually getting, you're seeing soil, and that would help too. But again, realize that the tall fescue and the Kentucky bluegrass, the tall fescue is never going to like smother out the Kentucky bluegrass. At least I doubt it. Mm-hmm. Unless we'd really, really have a drought period and to the point where it would. So realize it's never going to completely overtake the Kentucky bluegrass. You're still going to have that in that. If you want straight tall fescue, you'd have to do something where you'd have to remove that Kentucky bluegrass and then start all over again.
Well, I imagine that it doesn't hurt to have a variety of things in there.
Absolutely, it does not. You're absolutely right, and you're better off having some, you know, other grasses within those. So that's
always good. If I can reduce the amount of time I spend watering when it doesn't rain adequately, that
right.
would be nice.
Or just don't water at all and just let it go dormant. I mean, I know it doesn't look good. I mean, and obviously it's easy for me to say because I'm out in the country and, you know, I don't have neighbors, you know, where I have to worry about what my grass looks like. But, you know, that's the nature of the beast. These cool season grasses, that's what they do. That's what they're supposed to do. They go dormant when it's hot and dry. They go kind of brownish. As soon as we get into cooler temperatures and water, then they green up again. So it is truly something that we all have to think about. Is that really a route we want to go or not?
Well, the other thing we've done is we've planted woods in our front yard and ground covers, and I
sure
almost, unless it's a really, really, unless things look really, really, really wilted, I don't water that at all, and I
yeah.
weed it when necessary. So that has greatly reduced the amount of water we use. Is there a source for establishing rain gardens? I know people have produced information. Do you know offhand where one can find that, or local stuff?
Well, if you go to Prairie Rivers Network, they actually have done several different programs on establishing rain gardens. Actually, U of I Extension, we've done a couple programs on establishing rain gardens as well. But I think Prairie Rivers would be a good place to start. We actually do have, Wisconsin, I think it's University of Wisconsin, has an excellent brochure on rain gardens. It's just wonderful that you can download. And we actually have some that people can pick up at our Extension office as well. In a Champaign, if people want a copy of that. But it's just how to establish, and actually gives them nice plans on how to do that. And if people aren't familiar with what rain gardens are, those are really, you know, the whole idea is, you know, when we have all these hard surfaces out there, whether it's driveways or whatever, you know, the rain falls, and then it just goes in the storm sewer or wherever, and doesn't infiltrate where it lands. And so the whole idea of a rain garden is this would be something where your gutter would actually work its way into this rain garden situation, and it would fill up temporarily. So you get a little water temporarily, and then it would just infiltrate where it where the rain hits, it would infiltrate. So it's going back to those natural processes that we need to go back to when it comes to where rain goes.
So we can do what we on our own property a little bit to help recharge.
You bet. Mm-hmm. You bet. And even using like rain barrels. I'm a big believer in rain barrels. They use those quite a bit. And there are ways to do. People don't have to worry about mosquitoes. There's ways to deal with those kinds of things. And actually, it can look nice and actually be an excellent place to start, you know, as you say, in your own backyard.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to line 4. Caller from Piatt County. You're on the air with Sandy Mason. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Thank you.
Morning.
I bought some property, and I would like to establish a prairie, but I think my question is that I know just a little bit, but I need to know where to start, like this spring, and people will say, well, just call Pheasants Forever, and they'll plant it.
I bet they love that.
Yeah, seeds will take a long time, though, and I wanted actually, I mean, I'm very realistic about what the prairie looks like, but I wanted to put in more forbs, I think, than I've seen in some prairies, like, you know, more coneflowers and more of the liatris and things like that. And so does that have to be done by hand or plugs, or where would I start, or do you have a book you could recommend?
Well, I think probably a good place to start locally would certainly be Grand Prairie Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a website. I think it's just gpf.org. And you can just go to their website, and they have meetings, and they really know their stuff when it comes to establishing prairies. And you can actually talk to people, you know, other people that have established prairies, because there's a lot more than just, you know, I know you realize it, but I think a lot of times people think that they can just stop mowing. And then a prairie just emerges, but it doesn't work that way. So there are lots of things, especially in the very beginning, sort of getting things set up so you don't have other issues later on down the road. So I think I'd start with Grand Prairie Friends. They have lots of information online, and I think that'd be an excellent place to start.
Okay, could you tell me that website again?
I think it's gpf.org.
Okay.
Jay's checking here a minute, but I think...
Yeah, gpf.org seems to be a...
Am I right?
An accounting firm.
I could use that, too.
But I did find Grand Prairie Friends.
Yeah, maybe just do a search on Grand Prairie Friends.
Yeah, okay, and you'll come up with prairienet.org/GPF.
Oh, sorry.
We'll get to that.
Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your help.
Sure. And they also have, and I should say, they also have a sale in the springtime. It's usually like Mother's Day weekend or so. They have a sale, and they sell plants.
Yeah, I went there once, and it was like mobbed. But
Yeah. They have lots of good stuff. Right. But they also, you know, even through the farmers markets and stuff, they'll have them. But you can certainly get lots of good info as well as plants.
Okay. So, well, thank you so much for your
help. Hey, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks for checking on that, Jay. Everybody's going to an accounting firm asking about prairie questions.
Some accounting firm or something. Or maybe you want to use certified... Goodell, Porter, and Frederick.
Okay, never mind.
Well, we're at about the 30 past mark, and we are talking with Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. A regular visit she makes to talk about landscape, lawn and garden care, what you should be doing this winter. And our numbers are 333-9455. If you're local, 333-9455. For long distance, 800-222-9455. And we'll be glad to take your call. Right now, we do have some lines open. I'm Jay Pierce, sitting in for David Inge today. Sandy, I was looking in my garden journey that you handed me when you came in. Kind of a monthly bullet points of what you should be doing here from Extension. Could people get a hold of these?
Sure, they absolutely can. This is something that we produce locally. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's My Garden Journey. And it's the whole idea is it's, you know, what do you do in January? These are the things you need to think about in January. When should I plant bulbs? When should I prune my forsythia? All those kinds of things. So we do it month by month. And then we have it. And it's everything from lawns to vegetables to fruits to trees and shrubs. So no matter what your interest, there's something there. And then we allowed plenty of space so you can make your own notes, as in, I need to make sure I trim this, whatever it is, so you don't forget those kinds of things. Because so much in gardening is timing. So much of what we do is timing. So this is the whole idea of that. It's only $5. They can pick it up at the U of I Extension office at 801 North Country Fair Drive. We're just out there by Schnucks and what else? Mm-hmm. Oh, the YMCA.
YMCA's out there, the whole
fitness center is right there. So we're all out there. So just go out there and they can pick one of those up. So it's handy. It's a nice little gift for people, too.
That's great. And it has a list of the extension websites of interest, and I found those extremely. You know, I was telling you before we went on the air that I've been, for the past few years, getting my yard in shape.
Right.
You know, and doing a little bit, some annuals, a few perennials here and there, and, you know, this and that. But basically getting everything in shape to do planting, because I got the house and the property has been established, and the trees are all there, mm-hmm. and the evergreens, but nothing else. You know, nothing. Yeah. I remember my wife's comment, not even one lily came up.
Usually everybody has a daylily or two, right?
There wasn't anything. I mean, nothing. And so we pretty much started, you know, with some lilies and, of course, the annuals and the like, but just starting to establish, you know, some perennials and some presents. So we get some color here and there. This can be great. This can be a great thing to kind of go along and think of some of the things. Mm-hmm. Because when I think especially, you know, some of us, we're weekend gardeners. We have time to do sure. a little bit here and there, and we want to make the most of our time and make sure we're doing the right things at the right time.
And I think a lot of times it is, especially with insect problems or disease problems, mm-hmm. I know a lot of times people will call me, you know, they'll call me in September about bagworms on their spruce. Well, the time to take care of bagworms on your spruce is in June. It's not in September. You know, by then it's too late and you got to pick them off and it's really a pain. If you know these kinds of things, like through something like this, then you know, okay, this is the time to be thinking about bagworms. I need to control mm-hmm. or at least look for them or whatever. And so I think we can sort of hold off some of those problems that we don't really notice until they're really big problems. So I think that was the whole idea of this too, is that getting people to sort of think about things early and maybe not have nearly the problems mm-hmm. that they've had in the past.
That's great. One of the big projects I had to begin with was getting rid of the creeping Charlie, which
yeah.
I thought was really pretty at first. But then,
green.
You know, it is green, and it stayed green
it
all year, and
green.
I didn't mind it until it started getting
green right now.
I guess the guilt came. Yeah, I guess the guilt came in when it started getting into my neighbor's yard.
Yeah, there is that guilt factor.
You know, so I did get rid of it. I got rid of it, but now I've noticed a little bit coming back around some fringes, so I have to, you know, get on that again. That's one of those things you just have to keep on top of, I guess, and. You know, so that was a big part of my first year. Right. But I found when I got rid of it, I had no lawn over there. it was like, so we're taking care of that, and then so the thing I vow is to keep the creeping Charlie down for 2008. And the second
that's
thing,
your New Year's resolution.
That's my resolution. I'm going to early and often. I'm going to be out there. And the other thing is these insidious little vine things that wind their way around the hedges and evergreens
yeah.
and just kill them.
Yeah.
And they're all over the place. And they're coming in out of my neighbor's yard under the fence. And I wonder, I always want to look on the other side of the fence and see what they have growing there. I guess it's not rude to just pull them out. I hope it's not something that he's really trying to grow on purpose.
Yeah, that you may want to check out. I don't know. There's certainly lots of weedy kinds of things, like bindweed and
yeah.
some of those that just keep going. And they get worse every year is
yeah.
the problem.
So. Anyway, those are my two resolutions. If anybody has any.
Now, see, other people go for eating healthy, exercising.
No.
I'm glad to hear
I've
something
I've done those over
different.
The year, but this year it's to keep things alive, you know, and give it a chance in the garden. If you have a resolution, you can call us and share it maybe too. But let's go to Savoy, line one. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I bought a bag of winterizer, fertilizer. And I neglected to get it down so far. Can I still put it on?
Is that for the lawn?
Yeah,
yes.
for the lawn.
Yeah.
You know, I think normally we would say the end of November. So you're really not that far off, to be honest with you, and it's fairly warm. So I think if the situation arises, I think I'd just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, well, I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, because of the kind that it is in the winterizer, I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
All right,
Thank you
there
much.
You go. You got a reprieve. Hope we get, you know, a nice day to get it. Maybe that's what you
yeah,
do on that,
I don't know.
The 50-degree day.
It probably helped melt the ice a little bit.
Yeah, there you go.
On my lawn, which is all over my lawn.
Well, that's what mine is, too. In fact, I have a skating rink in the back. I did some grading, you know, to grade it away from the house. But unfortunately, it's graded all to the middle of the yard now. And so there's a skating rink there.
Well,
so
nice.
Yeah, well.
Weekend opportunity there.
Yes, there you go. Let's go to line four down in Paris, Illinois. You're on the air with Sandy Mason.
Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
I got a question about, you mentioned bindweed, mm-hmm. and I have bindweed coming up in several of my beds. I've been fighting it and pulling it and screaming and cussing at it, and it won't go away. And it just progressively seems to get worse no matter how much I pull. Is there anything I can do to get rid of that stuff? I thought about one bed doing, like, just stripping all the perennials and stuff out of it and just laying plastic on it and trying to do a solarization, you know, where you get it really hot underneath there in the summertime and trying to burn them out. I didn't know if that would work or not. But that, aside of that, I just didn't know. I just, it's driving me nuts. And I know. It's a bed situation I take care of for a customer. And, you know, you go away, you weed it, and you come back in 2 weeks and it doesn't look like you've done a darn thing.
I know.
And it's in with petunias and stuff, so it really makes it rough trying to pull the darn stuff out without tearing the crap out of everything. I'm open for suggestions, so if you've got anything, I sure would appreciate it.
Yeah, because the thing I noticed with, you know, field bindweed's a perennial, so as you know, it comes back every year. So it not only produces seeds, flowers and seeds, it produces these really long, long runners, and they're kind of white and kind of fleshy, and so when you pull, they just pop instead of coming out. They, you know, as we think of with a lot of things, it would instead of coming out, it just stays there. It just pops and, you know, breaks off. And so you never quite get the whole thing, even when you're trying to dig them up. You can see I've been through this myself. and the other thing I've noticed is that generally we're pretty good at getting it from around the plants, but right next to the plants, we're not very good at it because it intermingles with the daylilies or whatever. And so even if you get it from around. So, okay, here's my thought. What you may find, especially in these perennial beds, I think in the long run, you're better off in the springtime just to dig the plants up that you want to keep. And then you might even have to wash off the roots, but you'll find those white roots of the bindweed intermingling all these other plants, and then actually get them out of there, just physically get them out of there that way. And this may seem like a lot of effort, but I think in the long run, you're better off than trying to do this, you know, a little bit at a time kind of thing. So that would be one thought. If you really feel like, you know, something to the point where it's so intermingled with the other plants that there's no way. I don't know how you feel about herbicides. There's certainly actually some of the non-selective herbicides like Roundup and Cleanup, and some of those actually do a pretty good job. But obviously you have to be very careful. You know, when they first start to come up, you just sort of paint on the herbicide just a little bit. Make sure you don't get it on anything you want to keep. And then actually it does a pretty good job of helping to kill off those roots. So there may be a couple of methods along those lines where maybe in a few spots you decide you really just want to dig the plants up and get rid of the roots.
And I had thought about that. So that was my thought when I thought about doing the solarization. But the one bed that I've got evergreens in there, and that's the one that is just driving me wild.
Yeah. So you almost have to do either the Roundup method or just trying to smother them out as much as you can, you know, with even, and I've even tried even things like newspaper and stuff. It never seems to completely kill them off.
They'll come up through the newspaper.
They come up.
Down and around.
Yeah. And that's, you're absolutely right. And they just come up around it. And so trying to smother them out, I think, ends up being really hard, unless, like you say, you use black plastic. But the trouble is then you have to leave it on there for like 3 months and you kind of lose your season.
Do you think the solarization thing would work?
You know, I don't know. I think, again, you'd have to leave it on at least 3 months. I'd say at least 3 months, and it'd have to be pretty darn hot. You know, couldn't do it in the spring.
Well, this one bed is up against, it's on the east side of a wall, a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, if I took and stripped that off, and the, one of the books that I read suggested putting a light spray of water on the ground before you lay the plastic on it, and then really lay that plastic on there where no air can get through there.
And really try to boil them out.
I
think it would help. I do think it would help. But, you know, boy, it's a tough one. It absolutely is a tough one, as you know.
Well, if you can't get them, I don't know who could, babe.
Oh,
so,
man.
Thank you so much.
It's a long, and it's just like what you were saying, Jay. I think you have to just keep up with it and not let them even start
to
come back.
Yeah, you do. I mean, it is insidious, and I guess, you know, I'll just admit I don't like to use herbicides and the like, so I try to keep on pulling these things out, but you're right. I mean, it is. They're insidious. They just come a week later, you know, you're
back.
Well,
I wish you luck.
So that's it.
Good luck.
But it is coming to the point where, you know, the Roundup is going to come out in the paintbrush, and you're right, because it's in the middle of everything and these things, and then they wind around everything, and so you got to kind of Yep. Why can't stuff like that, why can't the stuff we want to grow like that? Yeah, I guess that's a question.
I don't know. Or maybe we just need to decide that bindweed tastes pretty darn good.
Maybe that's what we need to have. You know, we need to redefine what we think is beautiful. Oh, well. All right, let's go to line one, a caller from Fisher. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I know this is probably surely iffy territory, but I was wishfully thinking that maybe I could transplant a arborvita since the ground is still kind of thawed, and I thought, well, I don't want to kill it. It's about 4 years old.
As to whether you could do it now or not?
Yeah.
We actually transplant things, you know, quite a bit, even this time of year. I wouldn't go too much later. The problem with evergreens, and I think probably what I would do is get something like wilt-proof, which is something you actually spray on them. Because the problem with evergreens, of course, is they still have their leaves. And so if we get a lot of wind or something, then they still lose a lot of moisture. And then since you've cut the roots, sometimes there's issues that way. Oh. So I'd make sure I'd protect it from wind if you were going to go ahead and do that. So, and you could even wrap it in burlap, I suppose, if you wanted to. But somehow you got to protect it against the wind because it's going to lose a lot of moisture without having as many roots.
What is wilt-proof? Would you get that at a nursery? Is it
sure.
powder firm or what?
Yeah, I would check with any garden center kind of place. Most of them carry it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Good
Great.
Luck.
All right. Okay. Yeah, good luck with that. And line two, a caller from Urbana. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Just a thought on the solarization. Do it as he said, but then put mulch on top. And then bring out your potted plants. It'd be an excellent place to use, tropical hibiscus. I would, of course, suggest syningias, but I don't imagine most people even know what they are.
So, and actually, you're just saying to sort of quit using that area for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that would certainly be, because that's my, and I think you bring up a good point, is I think we're so anxious to get the bed going again that we pull off the plastic too early, and then you haven't gained a whole lot. So I think that's one of the big things. You're absolutely right. You need to smother them out as well as heat them out, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, well, that'd be a good suggestion.
Great. This would make a very nice bed, and you'd just leave it there until it frosts.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Great idea.
And then next year?
Thanks a lot.
Right.
Great. Good idea. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you much. Yeah. And so just put potted plants over the top of it, and then you'll still be using that territory, and you won't be seeing the plastic if you got the mulch over it, and it'll be doing its work underneath.
Sure.
That's a good suggestion.
That's a good idea.
333-9455. We have time for a few more calls with Sandy Mason, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you're long distance. Caller number one, or line number one, I should say, is in Urbana as well. Go ahead, please.
Quick question. I haven't dug my cannas yet. Is it too late?
Wow.
That wasn't a good wow.
I'm trying to think, what are the odds? You know, it's been pretty... I think what I would do, I would go ahead and dig them up. They're pretty resilient, and depending on where you've got them, I think I would go ahead and dig them up, and you'll find out really quick if it's too late. If they're all mushy, obviously the top part's going to be mushy, but if the rhizomes themselves are mushy, then it's too late and they're frozen too much. But I've been surprised sometimes, you know, even late like this, because it takes a long time for those soil temperatures to actually drop. So you might be surprised. I don't think I'd wait too much longer, though.
Okay. Thanks.
But I tried.
Thanks a lot, and good luck with that. And maybe call back and let us know.
And let us know if it really worked or not. It's amazingly resilient, some of the plants.
Line four in Mattoon. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Got two questions. One, my soil in my garden, vegetable garden, hadn't been tested in several years. And I was told I could go to Rural King or Walmart and buy a kit and do my own soil testing. And I'm just curious, I'd never heard that before, about the accuracy of a test like that. And my second question is, I've got two rows of garlic coming up. I planted them in October, and I've covered them with leaves a time or two, and they poked their up through the leaves, and I thought, well, I'll just put more leaves on. I just wondered what your opinion was on on that.
I think you're doing just exactly what you need to do with the garlic, because a lot of times they do pop up, and they'll probably, the top parts are going to get nipped somewhere along the line, and that's fine. It doesn't seem to affect them a whole lot. So I think you're just fine on those. As far as the soil testing kits, to be honest with you, I think it's money maybe better spent, in my mind, is to go ahead and just send it out to a soil testing lab. And we do have a couple of them around. There's one ASM Labs on North Mattis, way out there on North Mattis, and a lot of farm services places, a lot of, you know, even in a lot of different areas. I think if you check with your local ag community, someone's doing soil testing for it, and they do it in a lab situation. And then you could get an accurate idea of what's going on, because I have a feeling these soil testing kits that they're talking about at Walmart or whether are probably just checking for pH, mm-hmm. And I'm not sure a whole lot else, maybe organic matter, I don't know. So I think you'll get a much more accurate test if you go ahead, and they're not, and it's not expensive to go ahead and do this if you really feel like it's something that you want to go ahead and do. And it's not a bad idea to check soil, you know, periodically, especially if you're adding a lot of, you know, wood ashes or something like that might be changing the pH on it. So I think you're better off just sending it off to lab, to be honest with you.
I have added some lime after I had that blossom rot on tomatoes.
Oh.
That seemed to have helped a little bit, at least mm-hmm. something did. When you do soil testing, you just test two or three corners of the garden? Or
yeah, usually we recommend that, you know, you get a bucket, a clean bucket, and then actually just, you know, scrape off the top part of the soil so you're not getting less sticks or the very, very top surface, and then go ahead and get like a trowel full. In several areas, like, you know, at least four or five different areas, and then mix all that together and then get your final sample from that. That way you're not just taking from one single place. It just happened to be, for whatever reason, might have gotten more lime or whatever. So
you mix it together?
Yep, you mix it all together from those different spots, unless you really have different spots, as in, say, you're growing blueberries in one spot and tomatoes over here. You don't want those to be the same, so you'd treat those as two separate testing areas.
Are you familiar with any testing in Coles County?
In Coles County, I would check with your local extension office. Everybody's got one. So check with your local extension office, and they'll be in the phone book under Coles County, probably, or U of I. I would check with them, but I would almost bet that there's, and I'm trying to think there is one down there, but I just don't know right offhand. But I would check with them. And because we're so ag-oriented, pretty much all of them, all areas have some kind of soil testing labs associated with it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, there's a list on the extension page, urban extension page, UrbanXt.
Okay, so they can go out there and check for at least soil testing labs.
Yeah,
Urban. Check with their local extension office.
Yeah, urbanext.uiuc.edu. And you'll see the soil test list. There's one down in Shelbyville, which is kind of near Coles County.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
So over there, KSI Laboratories. So
yeah, that would be one.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right about the what I found with the home kits. It's mostly they're testing for the acid level.
Right.
You know,
and it's hard, you know, and so much of it depends on, you know, how we do it. And, you know, you have to take, you know, it's by color, you know, and depending on what, you know, some of that is so vague that it's really kind of hard to tell by using those home test kits.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, there's so many different compounds that, you know, people will test for at the professional labs
right,
and stuff.
Right.
So you get the balance. Yeah. And that's an important thing that I think a lot of people overlook is having the soil tested and knowing what you're putting on. You just go out and you get the Miracle-Grow and you spray it on. You wonder why some stuff goes through the roof and other stuff just kind of sits there and doesn't do much.
And I think this whole idea of feeding the soil, that's what we really encourage people to, you know, feed the soil rather than just feeding your plants. Just really think about how healthy the soil is. Makes a big difference on how well the plants are going
to
grow. So you got to start out with healthy soil.
All right. We have, let's see. I'm lost here. Line one, Champagne, is that you?
Yes, this
okay.
is me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I want this lovely
well,
little...
she would have said no. But,
no, no, it's
I'm
not
sorry.
Me.
No, it's someone else.
Well, then who is it? I'm sorry.
That's right.
Yeah, I bought this lovely little grassy plant last spring, and it was unusual in that it's maybe a foot tall, and it all the grassy kind of leaves grow in a tight corkscrew. But they're kind of a round blade rather than a flat blade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought when I bought it that it was a perennial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it might be. And anyway, I had it in a pot, and it's just lovely. And then I brought it in this fall when it started to get cold. And then I wondered if you do bring a perennial inside, will it be able to survive the winter indoors and then go back outside again, or would it be a lot better to winter outside?
Yeah, it really depends on the perennial. And the one that you're that I think you have, I'm not sure it's hardy. I mean, I'm not sure it's winter hardy or not.
Oh, okay.
So you may have done the absolutely right thing to do for that one, because I think it's a perennial, but I'm not sure it's a perennial here. So that would be one thing. So it kind of depends on the plant. But to go back to your question, for any of the kind of plants that we think of that are that normally would be perennial here, they really do need to go through a cold period in order to thrive the next year. They just need that. And whether you're talking about peonies or whatever, they need that. Now, does it have to be freezing for a long period of time? No. But usually they all have some sort of dormancy period or some sort of chilling, what they call chilling period, that's necessary for them to thrive. They probably go ahead and live, but they would be much better if you could put them in a cool spot. And it could be something like whether it's 35 degrees or someplace where it's cool and try to, you know, the best thing is to put them outside and let them go through their natural cold period. But if you truly had to bring it in for one reason or another, I'd still try to make sure that it's plenty cool.
Okay. And then I also brought in, I had an absolutely lovely begonia this year with these really ornate kind of curled leaves. And I brought that in and I thought, do you think that, do plants like that ever kind of make it through the winter indoors and then go back out? And
sure. Actually, a lot of the begonias are really just tender perennials. They'll live inside and as houseplants. So you can just grow them on as houseplants. So, again, you did the right thing, and I would just go ahead and grow it on as a houseplant and enjoy and then put it out again next year.
And do those like a lot of shade?
Outside or... You're talking about
indoors.
Indoors,
kind of a north window now.
Yeah, they do okay in actually fairly low light. I wouldn't make it super low light. So if you could have it in an area, you know, it'd probably be better if it was in like an east window or something like that. Okay. Was getting some light. I wouldn't put them on the list of plants that like really, really low light. So
okay, great. Thanks a bunch.
Sure.
All right. Thank you much. Yeah. Let's go to line two in Urbana. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. One, I've got thistle. How do I get rid of it?
Yeah, thistles are another one of those. You know, a lot, they're a lot like dandelions in the sense that, you know, even when you dig them up, there's still a lot of the root left usually, and so they'll just keep coming back. But you can, you've got these in your lawn or in their...
They're in the lawn. They used to be in the ground cover evergreen until the ground cover evergreen died.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Personally, I like having the birds around for the thistle, but apparently it's unsightly, and I imagine my neighbors don't like it.
Okay.
And it's spreading.
Okay. So it's gone to seed then?
I've had it for a couple years, yeah.
And it went to seed?
Yeah, it's been to... Okay. Well, I've kept it mowed down as much as I can.
Okay. Okay.
But it's gone to seed in the past.
Okay. Because that's what I was going to say. If you, number one is you want to mow it and make sure that it's not going to seed, because then you're just producing it. I know there's many different kinds of thistles, so I don't know exactly which one you might have. Canadian thistle is probably one of the worst ones in the sense that, because it sends out all these runners or underground stolons and spreads all over the place. So it's really insane. It really is a bad one.
Purple puffy flowers wouldn't help describe it.
Yeah. Canadian thistle has actually a very small flower.
These are probably about a centimeter and a half.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think the bottom line is you're going to have to maybe go to some of the things that we've already mentioned. It seems to be weed day. We came up with weed day, didn't it? I guess that's what we think about in the wintertime.
Yeah.
But it would be something where you'd either have to smother them out, as we mentioned before, like using black plastic and just try to smother them out that way. Would certainly be one way that you might want to go. You certainly, again, depending on how you feel about herbicides, a lot of the broadleaf weed killers, if it's in a lawn area, you could use the broadleaf type weed killers that you use on dandelions, those kinds of things, you know, digging them out. It's another one of those things that's it's kind of on a regular basis, but probably the big thing is making sure that they don't go to seed.
Right.
So that would be another thing, too. But usually it just takes a while. It's another one of those that, you know, between digging, usually between mowing and digging, you can make a pretty good way through, and then there may be certain areas you decide you want to smother them out.
Okay. And then my second question is, I did buy a few bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be giving them any kind of a head start if I planted them in my garage and got them started for a little while? And that would, I was, my thought was that it would acclimate them from indoors to a slightly cooler temperature, maybe get their roots started and then outdoors.
Sure, and you certainly can do that. You certainly could do that. The big thing, of course, is that, you know, we'd want to make sure that hopefully you could get them outside.
Right.
You know, so that they could go ahead and go through a cold period, and then depending on, you know, how frozen the soil is, that kind of thing. But if you had an area where you were knew you were going to go ahead and plant them, you could go ahead and, you know, take the soil and take some of the soil inside and, you know, have your holes kind of already there. And,
sure.
You know, while it's still unfrozen.
Sure.
So,
but
you're right.
That was kind of like the way that they do tulips and
sure.
They prep them so sure. That they can bring them in.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. All right. Thanks very much.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And good luck to you. And thanks to all the callers today. Sandy, did you have some workshops or anything
you wanted to mention
that are coming up?
It's definitely that time of year when we have workshops, because that's when people want to know about different things. So there's all kinds of things on. If you've ever thought about maybe growing vegetables or whatever, it might be this is the time to be looking at the U of I Extension website and coming up with all these different activities that are coming up. One of the big ones is the Illinois Specialty Growers Conference or Agritourism Conference. It's January 9th and 11th in Springfield. Great conference. If you have any interest in grapes, peaches, vegetables, herbs, apples, even pawpaws this year.
Pawpaws.
When I grow pawpaws. So that's good. January 9th and 11th in Springfield. And then on the 12th, there's actually an additional day there in Springfield, is on Buy Local, Eat Healthy, which I'm kind of excited about that one. It's on how to prepare exciting dishes with fresh produce, how to handle fresh produce, what does organic really mean. So that's really good. Also, the Mid-Am Trade Show, the horticultural event, is January 16th through the 18th up in Chicago. And then, of course, the Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference and Trade Show is January 17th and 18th here in Urbana at the Illini Union. Herb Day is January 19th. So it is the time. If you have any interest in maybe thinking about growing your own crops and then selling them, whatever, this would be the time to be looking into a lot of these sort of
looking
workshops.
A lot of them, and you'll find a list, I'm sure, on the Extension website. And I guess the idea is planning for next year. If there was one thing that you could wish when because you're here monthly and you're on you got your column in the News Gazette and you're on Illinois Gardener on Thursday nights on our TV station, 7 o'clock, by the way, from time to time. In all of the interaction you have with people, if you had to pick one thing for 2008 that you wish people would just do so they don't have to call you at the end of the year and go, help me.
Yeah.
What is the basic thing that people should just do? One, if you could pick one thing that you wish.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind.
Make a resolution next year to do this.
I think the first thing that comes to mind is for people just to get out in their landscapes. And it's good just for stress relief, number one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also good to check out those problems that you never would have noticed. You know, they generally call me when things are way down the road and they have a really serious problem. And a good example, I was out walking my dog a few weeks ago, and sure enough, I'm out in the land of corn and soybeans. Sure enough, I've got bagworms on one of my spruce trees. Where did those bagworms come from? I don't know. You know, but I never would have noticed if I hadn't been just walking around and looking at my trees and stuff. And now I picked off a couple bags. I'm not going to have a problem next year. If I'd left it, it'd be a serious problem in a very quick time. So just getting out, relax, enjoy, and then look around. See if there's any problems going on.
Just kind of, you know, you inspect your kids for lice and ticks and stuff. Inspect your plants.
No, that's all I say. Just take out a cup of coffee, wander around your landscape, enjoy, but then also look for problems.
Sandy, have a happy holiday season.
Hey, you
happy
too.
New Year. I guess
we'll
see you next month.
Thanks for coming.
All right. And Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with the U of I Extension in Champaign County. She stops by monthly to do these programs.